The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Just after 12 days of military strikes, the US President Donald Trump declared a ceasefire has been fully agreed by and between Israel and Iran. Taking to Truth Social, Trump said the official end would come after Israel and Iran wound down and completed their final missions. Hours later, both the Iranian and Israeli government says they have agreed to Donald Trump's ceasefire proposal. However, the Israeli military says it has identified missiles recently launched from Iran heading towards Israel, and they have said they will respond forcefully to the violation, and they've ordered a powerful strike or strikes on Iran. Now, in a moment, we'll get full analysis from Scott Lucas. But first, the announcement of a ceasefire was met with praise from U.S. politicians, including, and I suppose predictably, from his own Vice President, J.D. Vance.
The president, without, knock on wood, having a single American casualty, obliterated the Iranian nuclear program. We are now in a place where we weren't a week ago. A week ago, Iran was very close to having a nuclear weapon. Now, Iran is incapable of building a nuclear weapon with the equipment they have because we destroyed it. So that's a very, very big thing. Now, what that means, I think, is we have to talk to Iran and, of course, to Israel about what the future holds, because while we have obliterated the Iranian nuclear program, our hope and our expectation is that they're not going to try to rebuild that program. And I think that's what the president is really trying to figure out here, is to build a long-term settlement here to where we can have peace in the region, where our regional allies and, of course, the American people, most importantly, can be secured, but where we can ensure that the destruction of the Iranian nuclear program that has already happened is not something they try to rebuild.
And that was J.D. Vance on Fox News. And as Donald Trump announced that ceasefire deal on Truth Social, Fareed Zakaria on CNN had this analysis.
Really trying to transition from war maker to peacemaker. And he's used his considerable influence with Bibi Netanyahu. Let's remember the Israelis also did massive damage. So Israel feels like it can stop. Trump wants to move into a peacemaking role. He wants it to stop. The Iranians obviously have no, I mean, it's only good for them because they have not been able to really respond in any sense to Israel's pummeling attacks because they don't have much capacity. But then the question becomes, what do those negotiations look like? The key stumbling block has been this. President Trump began the negotiations saying Iran could have some enrichment capacity, but it couldn't be the kind that could be weaponized. The Israeli position has been no, zero enrichment under any circumstances. The Iranian position has been we have to have the legal right to enrich, which is our right under the NPT. So that's where you have it. You know, Israel and Iran were at complete loggerheads. The U.S. had a middle position. About 2 weeks ago, Trump moved to the Israeli position. So the question is, now that he wants to be a peacemaker, is there going to be any give there? Or do the Iranians feel they're so weak, they have no option but to move to concede to the Israeli position? That is going to be the heart of the negotiations once they begin.
Once they begin, the question is when, given the Iranian launch of missiles against Israel after the ceasefire was supposed to have taken effect, and the Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz has just issued a statement saying he has ordered the Israeli Defense Forces to respond forcefully to Iran's violation of the ceasefire with intense strikes against regime targets in the heart of Tehran. Now, we haven't had confirmation from Tehran that they actually had ordered these launches. Who knows what other factions might be at work there. But the road to peace is going to be a rocky one. A little earlier this week, former President Bill Clinton joined Jordan Klepper on The Daily Show, and he was asked about the situation generally in the Middle East and what his advice would be about finding that path to peace.
First of all, they're not talking about negotiating peace in the Middle East because the Israelis have no intention of, under President Prime Minister Netanyahu, of giving the Palestinians a state. And now they're too divided and crushed to organize themselves to achieve it. So, and President Trump apparently agrees with that they shouldn't have a state. But you don't want a disaster either. And Mr. Netanyahu has long wanted to fight Iran because that way he can stay in office forever and ever. I mean, he's been there most of the last 20 years. We got to convince our friends in the Middle East that we'll stand with them and try to protect them. But choosing undeclared wars in which the primary victims are civilians who are not politically involved one way or the other, just want to live decent lives, is not a very good solution. Do I think that we have to try to stop Iran from having a nuclear weapon? I do. I tried at that, and we had some success. But we don't have to have all this outright, constant killing of civilians who can't defend themselves, and they just want a chance to live.
And that's former U.S. President Bill Clinton. To get full analysis, we're joined on the line by Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute in UCD. Scott, good morning.
Morning to you, Pat.
Can you maybe analyze what's happening with the salvo of missiles from Iran after the ceasefire had officially been announced, and now what is promised to be a forceful response on Tehran by Israel? What's going on?
Okay, Pat. So Tehran had said that it was willing to accept the ceasefire at 4 a.m. local time in Tehran, 3:30 in Israel a.m., if Israel accepted that as well. But it took the Netanyahu government a few hours before it confirmed that it would agree to the ceasefire. I'd say that Netanyahu announcement only came about 90 minutes ago. So the question here is whether the two ballistic missiles that were fired from Iran on northern Israel were fired before or after they knew of Netanyahu's agreement to the ceasefire. Now, that's going to be irrelevant to the Israeli response, however, because as you have quoted the defense minister, they're going to carry out retaliatory intense strikes on central Tehran, like they did yesterday, where they claimed to hit military, paramilitary positions and Evin prison, the main prison, as well as killing another nuclear scientist, the 11th to be killed in the conflict. So we have to see what the size of the Israeli response is as to whether they want the ceasefire, and this is just one more chest thumping, or whether the Israelis are saying, no, we're actually going to persist with these attacks on Iran and the war continues.
Now, given that Iran had said that the retribution for the United States and its assets would be intense and huge and maybe proportionate to what had happened to them, why this sudden agreement to a ceasefire? What is going on in the background?
Well, Pat, have I got a story for you. Because the Iranian token strike yesterday, and they were token strikes, although there were 14 missiles fired, were all part of a scheme to try to manipulate Donald Trump into ceasing fire. What happened is that before the strike, the Iranians let it be known to Qatar, who effectively is an intermediary, we're firing on the base in your country that has this American personnel. The Qataris informed Washington. So, of course, all the personnel were put into shelters or evacuated. There were zero casualties. No Americans, no Qataris hurt. And at the same time, the Iranians have maintained open channels during Israel's war with J.D. Vance, the vice president, with Marco Rubio, the secretary of state, and with Donald Trump's envoy, the real estate developer Steve Witkoff. So the Iranians also let it be known as they fired the missiles. Look, we're firing 14 missiles in return for the 14 bombs you dropped on our nuclear facilities on Saturday, but we're open for this to be the end. That message was relayed to Trump by the American advisors, and Trump comes out with a series of tweets that declares the ceasefire. Now, of course, he's premature at that point. There wasn't a ceasefire at that point, but it opens the way for the Iranians to later make their message, which they did early this morning, we'll stop if Israel stops. So just as Trump had been manipulated by the Israelis into joining Israel's war only 48 hours earlier with those bunker buster strikes and missile strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, the Iranians and the Qataris were able to manipulate him into declaring a ceasefire, which may or may not hold.
So next step is obviously the bombing of Tehran by Israel, and who knows what the targets might be. I mean, is the supreme leader out of their reach at the moment, or is he still in the crosshairs of Israel?
Supreme leader is in a bunker probably in northeast Tehran, which is near his residence. It'll be heavily fortified, though, and the Trump administration did reject an Israeli request earlier in the war to support the assassination of the Supreme Leader. Now, Israeli ministers, notably the defense minister, Israel Katz, have said that Ayatollah Khamenei should cease to exist. But I would doubt that the Israelis are going to try to take him out, because if they're trying to take them out, you know, this is effectively regime change, even if Israel doesn't call it that. I think you're going to find more strikes probably on police headquarters, on the headquarters of Iran's military and their paramilitary, which is what happened yesterday. I think it'll probably be enough to send a message that Israel is not going to put up with any type of Iranian firing of missiles on their territory. But I don't think they'll want to antagonize Trump this quickly by effectively shattering the ceasefire.
Yeah. Now, the question of him, Trump, wanting a Nobel Peace Prize simply because Obama got one. And if people thought that was a bit of a joke, well, he himself was talking about this. I should have got one for the Congo. I should have got one for the Abraham Accords. I should have got one for Serbia. I should have got one for India and Pakistan. And of course, his whole shtick going into the election was that he would stop the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. He would stop the war in Gaza very, very quickly. None of that has worked out very well for him. But it shows that he is preoccupied by the Peace Prize.
And for better or worse, that's what's brought about this possible ceasefire. Just a few days ago, Pakistan nominating him to receive the Nobel Peace Prize because Pakistan's trying to curry favor with him after their recent scrap with India. Trump
then
is
they
upset.
Denominated him, didn't they? He bombed Iran, they denominated him.
Exactly. So Trump has got to get back to the photo opportunity playing the peacemaker to get that ultimate award that he wants, because Obama had gotten it. And Qatar knows that. The Iranians know that. Indeed, the Israelis know that. It was just in this case, it worked out at least in the short term in the favor of Iran and Qatar to play upon that. In other words, Pat, we're in an era where diplomacy doesn't determine whether or not we end wars. We're in an era where military strength doesn't determine on its own whether or not we end wars. We're in an era where one person's ego, provided he's the president of the United States, could determine whether or not we at least have a pause in wars.
Now, people would look back at Obama's award and say, well, he did nothing really to deserve that particular award. So is the Nobel Committee likely to try to play Trump by giving him the award?
Oh, I hate to predict anything in these uncertain times and to whether they would try to flatter Trump, but I'll go on a slightly different direction, Pat, which shows you the tragedy of where we are. The reason why Obama was given that Peace Prize in 2009 by the Nobel Committee was primarily because of his efforts to get a long-term settlement between Israel and what would become a state of Palestine. Those efforts collapsed at the end of 2009, soon after he got the award, because of division within his administration, and because of the opposition of the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Here we are 15 and a half years later, and we're not talking about an Israel-Palestine settlement. We're talking about Israel's open-ended war in Gaza. And this morning, Israeli politicians who welcomed the ceasefire with Iran, like the hard-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, did so because they said, now we can return to and focus on that war on Gaza and its civilians.
And we'll be talking to a reporter in Israel later on about the whole domestic and international agenda that Israel has. Just looking at a headline in the Irish Times today from Fintan O'Toole, Donald Trump's decision to go to war against Iran has taught every dictator a simple lesson. Get yourself an H-bomb fast or you'll be bombed whenever we feel like it.
So I'm going to go back to fact versus fiction on Iran's nuclear program. Which, because Trump said when he declared the ceasefire yesterday falsely that the U.S. bombing on Saturday had totally obliterated Iran's nuclear program. J.D. Vance repeated that falsehood. The Israelis repeated it this morning when they said they would agree to the ceasefire. The reality here is, for your listeners, just to make this very clear, we do not know the damage that Iran suffered at its underground facility at Fordo, because there is no bomb damage assessment yet. So we don't know if that was obliterated. But more importantly, the Americans did not hit the uranium enrichment facilities at Isfahan, and they did not touch a new, even larger facility at Natanz. So Iran's program may have been set back a bit, but it has not been ended. And a very good analyst, an arms control expert named Jeffrey Lewis, ran all the available information and estimated that Iran within 5 months will be back to the ability to enrich uranium to 60%, and although it hasn't done so far, potentially could enrichment to a military grade of 90%.
Now, the statement from Medvedev yesterday, who is Putin's deputy, he's the prime minister in Putin's presidency, he has said they're going to send armaments to Iran.
Well, quite often it's the vodka that's talking with Dmitry Medvedev, seriously. So I want to be careful with it. But let's take that issue at face value. You know, that's a bit of chest thumping perhaps on the Kremlin. But the fact of the matter is that the Kremlin is tied down with what is now a 40-month full-scale invasion of Ukraine. They are not making much progress there. They are overstretched in terms of their military and economic resources with that conflict. So the Russians don't want to get involved in a scrap between Israel and Iran, particularly because if the Russians start arming Iran, it's not going to make Mr. Trump happy, and they want to keep Mr. Trump on their side as they continue to try to conquer Ukraine.
Now, I'll read you some of the text coming in. The world is facing the worst of risks, the fury and retribution of a humiliated man. He craves adoration, but he gets nothing but half-hearted attention. His parade, for example, and huge pushback, the No Kings protest. He needs to look big, even though he's in fact very, very small, small in every way that would flatter his fragile ego. That's from M. Another one. How can Trump go to NATO and lay down the law when he's so close to Putin, which is NATO's sworn enemy? Is US membership of NATO now very questionable, and who will question it?
Well, I want to take that beyond Trump to say we're talking about three men who have egos, who don't want to lose face. We're not just talking about Donald Trump. We're also talking about Benjamin Netanyahu, who, if he does not, quote, defeat Iran, and if he doesn't defeat Hamas in Gaza, he faces early elections and he faces his trial and bribery charges. And we're talking about Iran's supreme leader, who has been in power for now more than 35 years, who is in his mid-80s and who is still very, very anti-American, not just anti-Trump, anti-American. And he does not want to be defeated by the great Satan. So it's the combination of those egos. In terms of where NATO goes from here, I think NATO, in the midst of these crises, and the Europeans involved in NATO, including those alongside it, but not members such as Ireland, they have to make their plans without assuming that they have an American ally. They have to plan for these crises by being adults in the room, and they have to talk to those Americans, including those military commanders who are in NATO, and keep those lines open precisely because of the whims and uncertainty around Donald Trump.
Scott, thank you very much for joining us. That's Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. A final comment today. It's not that Iran doesn't have many friends in the region. In reality, it's more accurate to say that international law doesn't have many friends, not just in the region.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.